Chapter 9. Imperator Gloriana. When the demands of war retreated, Rabuta Gilliman was not idle. He worked, like he always had, ceaselessly toiling for humanity, even if now he struggled for the species' survival rather than its advancement. Rabuta Gilliman's chambers were better stocked than most libraries, and far better ordered. At the heart of the Primarch's palace, upon the Macragge's honour, was his scriptorium. Most of the material originally within had been removed to the library of Ptolemy on Macragge after the ship had come home. Gilliman had been quick to replenish it upon his rebirth. Beneath the scriptorium's soaring dome, at a desk surrounded by circular walls of shelves that stretched 70 meters up, was where he spent what little free time he had. Old paper made the air smell tart. Mouldering scrolls lay next to data crystals and magnetic tape. Runic inscriptions on crumbling bark lay on top of hololith cylinders containing true-picked tri-D representations of forgotten wars. Graven copper cubes, wherein languished thoughts, captured from living brains, shared desk space with yellowed cardboard boxes full of images on simple chemical film that was brittle with time. Thousands of years of history recorded upon every device employed by mankind surrounded the Primarch, and this was but the smallest part of his collection. Much more he had studied, digested, processed, and recorded onto more permanent data capture systems to be filed back on Macragge. A century on from his rebirth, Gilliman had not yet grasped all the events of the 10 millennia since he fell. Belisarius' call had provided the Primarch with painful but necessary machine-moderated engrammatic updates, but Call was a secretive creature, detached from the wider galaxy while he pursued his quest to create the Primaris space marines. His records were incomplete, sometimes highly fragmentary, and all of them were short on detail. Once again, Gilliman had found his own efforts were required to make up for the shortcomings of others. The discipline of history, like so much else based on reason, had fallen foul of superstition, fanaticism, and the High Lords of Terror's need for iron control. Comparative and corroborative analytical techniques had given way to the recording of gossip, hearsay, and folklore. All was liberally mixed with works of complete fabrication. Imperial interference in redacting chronicles, misguidedly or not, had further destroyed much of the past. War had eradicated the histories of entire worlds. Much knowledge had been burned by zealous inquisitors, often in order to suppress a single uncomfortable truth. If anything, the state of man's knowledge was worse than it was back after the Unification Wars, when the Emperor had unified Terra before the Great Crusade. Much of Terra's ancient history, painstakingly pieced together by the remembrances of Gilliman's own era, had been lost again. Knowledge of the warp's true nature had been suppressed, but patchily so. The great deception the Emperor had practiced had become impossible to sustain, though that had not stopped the Inquisition from trying. Knowledge of demons or the dark gods was forbidden. Many innocents had paid the ultimate price for accidentally learning the truth. Even Gilliman, the Imperial Regent himself, faced opposition from the Inquisition in his quest for knowledge. To oppose their puritanical redactionism, he had trained his own corps of historitors. Between campaigns, he sought out inquisitive minds, exactly the sort that had long been frowned upon, rescuing them from penal servitude and impending brain wipe. The first handful he had tutored himself when time allowed. They, in turn, taught more, and more still. Each one was assessed by the Primarch personally. Those that passed were given the rank of Historitor Investigatus. Those that failed to meet his exacting standards were given less taxing roles within the new organization, as librarians, servants, and assistants. From his reading, Gilliman had learnt that the brutal machinery of imperial government was unkind to failures, yet another thing that saddened him about the present age. The Primarch had enough blood upon his conscience, and a much finer grasp of how to get the most out of his subjects. No life was wasted. As the century since his rebirth wound on, the numbers of historitors grew from 4 to 8 to 16, until now the Logos Historica Verita numbered 500 operatives and 1,000 support staff. Utilizing long-dead academic arts, they attempted the impossible, the construction of a reliable history of the Imperium. Against great odds, small cells of the Logos searched out ancient records. At their presentation of the Primarch's seal, forbidden vaults were opened and emptied, their contents copied and dispatched to Gilliman's crusade wherever it was. The Logos's work was a torturous, dangerous affair. War zones engulfed half the galaxy, and his Historiter team sometimes disappeared into them without trace. Often, they were opposed. Still, Gilliman would not be stopped. Every man needed a pastime, even a Primarch. He was reading a book new to his collection. Ancient leather, friable to the point of disintegration, bound a partisan work on the Chronostrife of Terror. Gilliman digested the work with a frowning countenance. Flickering screed passed over multiple data slates around his desk. Dust motes danced in the light of two small hololiths either side of him. To an undiscerning eye, the Primarch appeared to be ignoring them, but every iota of data that passed over them was processed by his superior mind while he read the book. There was nothing that needed his direct input, but he watched everything, annotating reports and answering the shifting stream of queries with quick scratches of a quill on an auto-tablet set at his right hand. The movements were so small, swift and deft that they were easily missed. His mind had such a capacity he could organize the actions of 1,000 groups working towards different aims, all while most of his attention was taken up by a book in the impenetrable dialect of an imperial sect. He did not like what he read. One of thousands of secret conflicts conducted by rival factions in the Imperium, the Chronostrife was a bitter, ongoing internal war within the Ordo Chronos over the Imperium's dating system. What he read made him despair. Not even his father's calendar had survived the millennia intact. During the Great Crusade and the Heresy, the standard dating system had provided some idea of the order of events over time, but like everything else the Emperor had created, the calendar had become degraded by both dogmatic adherence and thoughtless revisionism. Various rival dating systems had evolved from the Imperial standard, making a true chronicle of the galaxy almost impossible to construct. By the five main factional variants, Gilliman calculated the current year to be anywhere between early M41 and a millennium later, and that was leaving out the numerous lesser, more heretical interpretations. There was much useful information in the book, but it was written in a torturous, overly embroidered style. The author's viewpoint transcended fanaticism.
"Who is not a fanatic in these benighted times?" he said to himself. Gilliman pushed away the crumbling book, his patience tested by the author's endless calls for the public immolation of his opponents. "Emperor, save me from faith," he said, and rose from his seat. He had been hoping to find a solution to the Imperium's tortured dating system. He had instead found there was none. Something else, then, that required his personal attention. Already, his powerful mind was working on a number of fixes. Musing on his ideas, he washed book mold from his fingers in a silver salver set on its own table, and he checked the endless run of report screeds a final time. There was nothing that could not wait. He required a moment's respite, and he went to find it in the armored cloister encircling the library's ground floor. Outside the shelves, the tower's base was a series of arches. In every archway, a blast door waited to slam down. On the other side of the arches, a long gallery of armor glass looked out in every direction over the McCrag's honor. If Gilliman walked around the circumference of his library, he could see all the way to the massive prow and its adamantium ram. Either side, on the flanks, stubby wings swept out, covered in sensor arrays and auguries. Almost directly below his spire were the main hangar decks of the vessel, while to the aft, the sun-bright glow of the engines reflected around the cloister, although to see them directly, he would have to walk 100 meters. Off to starboard, the pit of Raucus turned. Gilliman had a notion the warp was angered by the traitor's defeat, and so the pupilless eye of Raucus glared the harder at him. Once upon a time, he would have dismissed such feelings as fancy, an artifact of the way the Terran mind processed visual information. Now, he knew they were not.
The galaxy was a far stranger place than either of his fathers had taught him. At the thought of his fathers, the memory of the sights he had witnessed in the throne room a century ago intruded violently into his mind. Against the odds, something lingered on the golden throne. His last encounter with his true father had been a spear of light and pain whose psychic aftershocks troubled him still. The Emperor had lost his subtlety. Gilliman pushed the memory aside before he could begin dwelling on it. Such ruminations never ended well. He wished he could speak with one of his brothers about what had transpired there on Terra, but they were all gone. He sighed morosely. Seeking solitude had reminded him of how alone he was. He let his eyes drift over the void, emptied his mind, and allowed his sorrow to slip away. Debris fields occluded some of Raucus's violent depths. Sparkling showers of metal, clouds of frozen gas, and shattered hulls drifted blackly across the sun. Work proceeded to salvage wrecked Imperial vessels. Great Adeptus Mechanicus Salvator arcs stood off at nexus points between the wrecks, calculated for maximum distance efficiency. Ships flew between them and the broken vessels in precisely spaced streams. Scavenger scows crawled back and forth across space, their projecting limbs and swarms of attendant drones working together with insectile efficiency. The more intact wrecks had many small salvage pods anchored to them, like limpets, blue flashes sparkling all around these viable craft as they were made fit for warp transit to shipyards. The adamantium frames of Imperial ships were practically indestructible. As long as the reactors did not explode, they would survive to be refitted again, as some had been 100 times over. Some changes had been made to Imperial salvaging policies within the fleet. Gilliman had ordered the wrecks of the traitor ships to be utterly destroyed. It had been the habit of the Adeptus Mechanicus and the Navy to recover enemy ships. Chaos vessels were of Imperial make and were often of older, superior patterns. The Primarch stamped hard on the practice. Build new ships, he had said. Leave the past where it is. The corruption of the warp buried itself deeply into whatever it touched. The Martians had not been happy with that. They had looked upon the older marks of vessel with greedy eyes. Examples had been made. The rest of the fleet hung against the raging pit, set into a box defense pattern. Thin lines of lights passing between the battleships marked out the flight paths of inter-ship traffic, as officers and repair crews shuttled back and forth between vessels. Every craft bore some sign of damage, from this or prior engagements, and over them all flickered plasma torches. They were strong, still, even wounded, and Gilliman took an immense pride in the scale of the Indomitus Crusade. The Navy had been disunited when he had returned, and under strength. Gilliman had turned the efforts of many systems to producing new ships. Behind the wall of vessels nearest to the pit of Raucus, the null ships of the Sisters of Silence waited, their arcane weapons ready to obliterate any uncanny foe that dared entry to the material realm. He did not expect any. The Fane was gone. The system's sole viable world belonged to the Imperium now. Beyond Raucus was the smallest part of the Cicatrix Maledictum. The Great Rift was a broad band of energies stretched across space from one side of the galaxy to the other. It divided the Imperium neatly in two, shrouding the dense yoke of stars at the heart of the galaxy completely. The light was painful to observe. Though it appeared to be a natural stellar phenomenon, to look into it for any length of time showed a man things that he would rather not see. What Gilliman saw was a tragedy, the latest play in a war millions of years in the fighting. The last 10 millennia, though an age in the lifetime of mankind, was a heartbeat of time, a single summer's campaign. The magnitude of the war against chaos, the empires lost and the peoples damned, awed the Primarch. He had learned these things from the Eldari, though they were unwilling to tell him the complete story. But he knew far more than he had of the war in heaven and of the conflicts between the ancient races. Against this all-devouring cosmic evil that had consumed species after species and brought man's first stellar empire low, Gilliman's father had set himself. The scale of his self-appointed task was yet another thing the Emperor had not deigned to share with his sons.
We constantly battle the sins of the fathers, thought Gilliman. That is no less true on an eternal scale than it is within the history of a single world. We suffer because of those that have gone before.
Gilliman looked upon the ruins of the Emperor's dream in despondency. He would never give in to his feelings, and he would never show them to another, but they were there nonetheless. Even after the Emperor had fallen silent following the heresy, there had been the promise of something better, the possibility of realizing his dream for him. But Gilliman had been pursuing the wrong dream. The Imperium had been the means to an end, not the end in itself. He could never have foreseen this future, where pain and ignorance were the universal lot of ordinary citizens. Superstition had overtaken reason. There was no hope, only blind faith in the Emperor. Trillions of souls united in frantic pleas for salvation. And now the lion's share of that desperate expectation was his to bear. The eyes of all mankind looked to him. He would never complain. But in these moments when he stopped, when the need for strategy and planning slackened for a second, the despair was there, waiting for him to give in and drown.
I will not give in.
He spoke to the pit of raucous through gritted teeth.
I will never, ever stop until this is set right. I defy you as my father defied you.
Father. The word caught on his lips. The habit of 10,000 years was hard to break. He unclenched his jaw. His hands had formed themselves into tight fists without him noticing. Rage. Good. That kept him on the correct course. That would see him through. He uncurled his fingers and let out a long, calming breath. A soft fanfare announced the intention of Captain Felix to speak with him. A cyber cherub clattered in a clumsy search pattern around the scriptorium on metal wings. Such things were grotesque, techno-alchemy far removed from the purer machinery of his day. The madness of Mars had infected everything. Gilliman let it flap about pathetically, its underpowered ocular sensors gridding the scriptorium as it searched for him. The pallid flesh of the cherub's torso and arms was sore where steel cables plunged into the skin. The rest of it was mechanical, with metal wings and legs. A bare child's skull made in perfect silver capped a neck of woven copper. It wove jerkily under one of the arches into a cloister, and thereafter found him soon enough. It came to a halt and hovered, wings noisily beating.
My Lord Gilliman.
The thing's skeletal jaw was cast shut, and Felix's voice crackled out of a brass trumpet stitched into a dead hand. The cherub's emerald eyes flashed at each word. The sensibilities of this age did not appeal to Gilliman. Hateful art for a hateful time.
I am sorry to disturb your work, continued Felix, but the priest is here.
He is early, said Gilliman.
He apologizes, my lord. He merely wished to be on time.
Behind the tinniness imparted by the cherub's augmeter, Felix's voice was unnaturally deep, a mark of the Primaris type.
He says he is happy to wait, my lord, but I thought it best to inform you.
There are many vices, Felix. Earliness is not one that troubles me, said Gilliman. I will see him now.
Gilliman looked into the eyes of the cherub.
I'm taking a short respite from the tedium of other men's ramblings. Send him in. I will be glad of the change that conversation will bring.
Even with a priest.
It was a rare, wry comment from the Seneschal. Captain Felix was a serious creature who never made light, as was to be expected from a man who had spent 10,000 years in and out of stasis.
Even with a priest, said Gilliman.
As you wish, my lord.
The light went from the cherub's eyes. It flew off, motor buzzing. The Primarch watched it go back to its roost with critical eyes. The wings were more than adornment. From the sound of it, there was not enough lift in the gravity impeller to keep it aloft. The machines of this millennium were crude. The engineers among his brothers would probably have caught the thing in a net and rebuilt the motor. he was close to doing so himself. Either that, or tossing it out of an airlock into the void and replacing it with something less ghoulish. He refrained from acting out his thoughts. Consideration, evaluation, action. That was his way. Rabute Gilliman was not a slave to impulse. Thinking on the cherub brought another unwelcome flash of what he had seen behind the Eternity Gate. The corpse in the ungentle embrace of Mechanicus technology, part meat, part machine, and the terrible screaming of the soul siphons. He shook his head to quash the memory. He could not fix everything, not all at once. Gilliman deliberately put the grotesque device from his mind and returned to his desk. He did not sit, but pulled out a new book and stood flicking through it. He was unwilling to continue reading the chronologue's ranting today. The man was 1,000 years dead. His words could stand another day's wait. 3 minutes later, and he had absorbed half the book's contents. Nothing interesting. Another small world of small deeds and small men. The door to the library opened with a soft whoosh of equalizing pressure. Voices too low even for Gilliman's superior hearing to catch blunted themselves on his books. The Primarch looked up. He resolved to avoid judging the priest until he saw him in person, but previous experience had colored his perceptions of the adepts deeply. Would the man start to wail like the last one, or collapse into religious ecstasy? The possibilities were as irksome as they were limited.
Lorgar, thought Gilliman, he would have enjoyed crowing about this.
The soft slap of sandals on marble echoed around the library. By this humble sound was the next militant apostolic prelate to the Primarch announced. It was far better than the Herald Cherub's synthesized warbling. Frater Matthew was a slight man. His crossed arms were buried in the sleeves of the plain cream robes of the Acronite mendicants he wore. Gilliman doubted he would have recognized his habit without the information he had gathered on the priest. The suborders of the Adeptus Ministerium were so numerous, even he had no hope of memorizing them all. Matthew's thick hair was cropped to a flopping quiff that clung to the forefront of his skull. The rest was shaved down to stubble-blued scalp. He appeared calm and healthy. If anything surprised the Primarch about Matthew, it was his seeming youthfulness. Gilliman had, of course, extensive files on those who had made his shortlist for the role of militant apostolic, but his natural prejudices assumed the priesthood to fall into a small number of categories. Old, mad, dissolute, fanatical, or a delightful combination of any of them. Gilliman made a mental note to adjust his thinking. He was falling into dangerous patterns. Matthew was not a bullet-headed rabble-rouser, nor a sickly black-toothed extremist, nor was he an aged primate, thick with the brocade of office and the dust of inactivity. An air of peaceful placidity radiated from him, and though Gilliman had also encountered this before, Matthew's was without the accompanying self-satisfaction that invariably suffused men of faith. His movements suggested a man used to fighting. A red rope belt cinched his waist. On one side was a simple pouch purse, on the other a battered leather holster for a long-barreled las pistol. The gun had been taken from him. Felix's diligence amused Gilliman. The priest posed no threat to him whatsoever. A servo skull trailed behind Matthew at head height, as modest as its owner. A large HV was engraved into its forehead, but otherwise it was unadorned. The motor cowling, manipulators, and the frame for the single sensor were plain plasteel, and there was no plating of precious metals upon the bone. Matthew approached confidently, without outward signs of pious joy at being so close to a son of the Emperor. He did not quake, or sing, or burst into tears. He was not afraid. He smiled, instead, with an edge of sly humour Gilliman instantly liked. It was a smile that acknowledged the uncomfortableness of the situation and the uneven power dynamic. It was a smile that said its wearer understood those things and found them amusing. The priest stopped before Gilliman on a wide rug. Spreading his arms wide, he bowed low. "My Lord Rabute Gilliman," he said, "it is an honour to meet you." the priest's long sleeves brushing the carpet softly.
"Please, Frater Matthew, sit."
Gilliman gestured to a stool built for mortals tucked away under a table. Gilliman had balanced a pile of books on it. Matthew removed them, and they both sat, Gilliman in his oversized chair, Matthew on his stool, like a child at a scolum before the master.
"Do you know why I have called you here?"
Matthew nodded. "I think so."
"Then say why."
Matthew pursed his lips, raised one knee, and clasped his hands around it.
"It sounds like arrogance when voiced, but to borrow the parlance of your sons, it is the only practical that fits the theoretical. However, I fear I'm being tested and am wary of looking foolish."
Gilliman liked the man's honesty and nodded in open approval.
"Nothing will happen to you if you are wrong. I am not in the habit of immolating people I disagree with."
A wildly undiplomatic statement, but calculated. If the priest was to serve him, he must accede to Gilliman's thoughts and beliefs. Too many in the Adeptus Ministorum reacted badly at any indictment of their practices. Matthew ignored the comment, but paused for thought before speaking.
"Good," thought Gilliman.
"Militant apostolic Giesen is dead of old age," said Matthew. "Shortly before the glorious victory at Rokos, you seek a new militant apostolic for your crusade. The Adeptus Ministorum would appoint one itself if you allowed it, but you always recruit your own, and often from the lower ranks of the priesthood, though not usually so lowly as mine. To give me this appointment as your holy mouthpiece is the only reason I can think of for you to call me here, unless I have offended you personally in some way and you wish to punish me. Forgive me if I have, but I do not think that is so, nor do I think you have called me here to gather intelligence."
"Mouthpiece," said Gilliman.
Matthew nodded.
"A tool in priestly garb. That is what the office of militant apostolic is. I have heard it said you do not hold the emperor as a god. You require someone to allay the fears this belief will raise. Therefore, a mouthpiece, a priest to reassure the masses that you are not a terrible heretic."
Matthew smiled again. Gilliman made a noise in his throat.
"I need free-willed men to serve me, not mouthpieces. But that aside, you are correct."
He plucked up a large sheet of illuminated vellum.
"Your certification of office."
Matthew raised an eyebrow. His raised leg thumped to the floor, and he scratched the back of his head.
"That's it? No ceremony?"
"Not today, no," said Gilliman. "I will, of course, formally invest you soon, but I need you to begin work now."
Matthew did not take the vellum.
"This is a great honour."
"It is," said Gilliman. "You do not take the certification."
"I am not sure I am worthy. I must be careful before I accept. Perhaps I should not accept."
Gilliman shrugged his mountainous shoulders.
"You are wise to hesitate."
He put the sheet aside.
"You have questions. Ask them. You are entitled to."
"I was afraid questions would be unwelcome."
"I make my methods and tempers well known. Am I such a stranger to my own people?"
"You are surrounded by legend, my lord."
Matthew looked about the room, craning his neck to take in the shelves curving around the room's shaft.
"What is it, exactly, that you are doing here, my lord?"
Gilliman followed the priest's gaze around the high stacks.
"Knowledge is power, and my own is lacking. I have a great deal to understand before I can begin to rebuild the Imperium. To that end, I am collecting as many histories of as many worlds as I can. I will use them to model the last 10 millennia so that I might study it, and from it make a true history, the like of which has not been written for thousands of years.
By doing so, I will understand what went wrong with my father's plans and be able to formulate a correction.
You speak plainly.
Nothing is gained through obfuscation, said Gilliman. Time is short. Why would I lie?
I see.
Matthew paused again.
I beg your pardon for my impertinence, my lord.
You are aware enough to recognize impertinence, yet still you proceed, interrupted Gilliman testily. Ask me, or do not. There can be no secrets between you and I if you are to serve me effectively.
My apologies, the priest said smoothly.
Frater Matthew's peaceful face showed the barest sign of strain, a tick under one eye. Gilliman noticed it. Irritated with himself for putting the man on edge, he leaned back in his chair, adopting a remarkably human posture for one so inhuman. He folded his hands in his lap.
Let us start anew, Gilliman said. It is I who should apologize. A man may hold a different point of view to another. It is no excuse for ill manners. Once, I was more even-tempered. But now...
Gilliman trailed off, his eyes straying over the mounded remains of 10 millennia of history.
Things are not what they were. I am not who I was. I'm pressed on all sides. I let my temper get the better of me. It is late, and there is so much to do.
He shook his head and attempted to smile.
Please, priest, your impertinence, voice it openly.
Frater Matthew relaxed, a change in posture imperceptible to a normal man, but clear to the Primarch. The flicker of a decision being made passed over his face. Again, the priest considered his next words carefully.
There is an element of hypocrisy to your activities, my lord. You ordered the doors to the Library of Ptolemy on Macragge barred, pronouncing the time of learning done. But here you devote yourself to the pursuit of history.
Gilliman made a reasonable face, conceding the point.
I stand by my actions. One day those doors will be unbarred. What I did there was symbolic. Who even in my own realm read and understood what the library contained? I sealed the doors not against the truth, but against the superstition that has taken truth's place.
Though there was, of course, that one book that told a history he would rather no one read just now. He could not afford the shadow of the Second Imperium to hang over his latest ventures, so this he did not mention.
All eyes must be on the future, Gilliman continued. One version of the past is in that library, another is in the heads of men. The closing of the doors was symbolic but powerful. It seals both versions of the future away for now. I prepare, Matthew. When this crisis is past, perhaps something of my father's dream might be realized, though we have a long way to climb. If we are lucky, when I reopen the doors to the Library of Ptolemy, those who enter in might finally understand what they read.
The Primarch sighed.
I will be honest with you. So listen. You are privy to matters I do not readily share. I see that in the period following the Great Heresy War, I was too focused upon the reformation of the legions, trusting to the council my father created to govern wisely. My optimism was misguided. This terrible future I find myself in is my fault as much as anyone else's. Now I have concluded my revisions for the Codex Astartes. I have begun work upon a new book. This book I shall call the Codex Imperialis. In it, I shall set down the principles of good governance long denied our species. Compiling an accurate history is only the start of the process.
You do this while conducting this war, said Matthew in disbelief.
I have few of the powers your priesthood ascribes to me, Matthew, but I do have other abilities. I was made to accomplish many goals at once.
Truly, the Emperor was wise in creating one such as you.
The unwelcome taint of awe stole into the priest's face.
Not as wise as you think,
said Gilliman, unable to keep the bitterness from his voice.
I was one of 20. 2 failed. Half the rest turned on my father. The Emperor is not infallible, nor am I.
A blasphemy intended to provoke the priest. A cheap tactic. Matthew was thankfully unmoved.
Yes,
Matthew smiled serenely. But in your holiness, you did not turn.
I am not holy, said Gilliman. Worship the Emperor if you must, but I am not deserving of your praise, nor will I accept it.
I have heard some of your beliefs, said Matthew. When first awoken, you insisted upon something called the imperial truth. Gilliman looked away, irritated, reminded of old lies. He had been rash to voice his objections to the ecclesiarchy in those early days after his awakening. It had taken him time to recover the full measure of his wits, and he had been alarmed by what he found. His feelings on the imperial truth remained conflicted. He had not forgiven the Emperor for hiding the true nature of the warp from them all. He did not know if he ever could. That one great lie undermined everything else his father had said. If he had not lied, then history might have been very different.
Theoretical, thought Gilliman, slipping into Macragian dialectic problem-solving. What if he was lying about more than the gods of the warp?
Once he would never have entertained such thoughts. This living hell had challenged everything he had believed.
A modified version of it, yes, he said. Reason still has a place amid all this madness.
Some may disagree with that, said Matthew, amicably. His eyes glinted shrewdly. As I understand it, my lord, this truth denies not only your divinity, but that of your father.
The Emperor denied his own divinity, said Gilliman flatly.
The priest shrugged. Gilliman had seen the look on the priest's face too many times on other holy men. It was the look of the blindly faithful.
If the Emperor himself stood up, thought Gilliman, came down off his golden throne and proclaimed, I am not a god, then they would burn him as a heretic.
Matthew exhibited few signs of fanaticism, but the Primarch would give it time. The more serene the priest on the outside, the deeper his faith was on the inside, and the deeper the faith, the hotter the righteous fires he might cast you into. There was a balance of humours Gilliman required. His militant apostolic needed some of that zeal.
But be careful, there is not too much fire, Rabute, he chided himself, or you will be burnt yourself.
If you do not hold with the teachings of our glorious church, said Matthew, then why did you treat with us at all?
Because the Adeptus Ministerium has power, and though it has used that power unwisely on occasion, once the balance sheet is reckoned, I see it is and has been a force for good.
Gilliman looked the priest squarely in the eyes. The priest tried and failed to return his gaze.
I need the Adeptus Ministerium. I need their support. The turning of the galaxy depends on their approval, though I may wish it were not so.
He paused.
I intend to end the Indomitus Crusade and divide the fleet, Frater, and I would have the blessing of the Ecclesiarchy, both for my men's morale and to present a united front to those who would sow division within the Imperium.
You do not need to ask for the Adeptus Ministerium's blessing, my lord. Any of my peers, any cardinal or episcopi, would have leapt at the chance to proclaim your divine will.
I suppose I do not need to ask, said Gilliman, reaching for a slender, leather-bound volume. But if I do, then in time you will see me for what I am, and not what you believe me to be. A god has no need for manners. There are other factors.
Gilliman held out the book.
Let us leave your certification for now, if you wish, but take these notes of mine. These are the topics I would like the blessing to cover. You claim to represent the Emperor's word, You are better placed to speak his will and obey my orders and resolve neatly any contradictions there might be between the twain. A delicate time lies ahead. I cannot rule by diktat alone. Every institution does as I ask, for I am the imperial regent. I am the emperor's living agent. But I am no tyrant, and I will not become one. I will have all the imperium at my back willingly, or we will fail. I cannot become my brother Horus.
Nobody said you were a usurper, my lord, said the priest, and took the slim book from the Primarch's hands. His fingers shook. In terms of paper and leather, it weighed hardly anything, but there was responsibility there enough to crush a horde of saints.
The most dangerous thoughts go unsaid, said Gilliman. Many think it.
He turned back to his datasplays and hololiths. The conversation was over, but the priest remained. A moment later, Gilliman looked over his shoulder.
Still here, priest?
I have one more question, if you might indulge me, said Matthew. Gilliman picked up a stylus and began marking a data slate, where a list of new finds for his library glowed greenly. He began ticking off the books he desired to see soonest.
You want to know why I chose you? Why not a cardinal, or the ecclesiarch himself? It is only natural.
The priest nodded. I am the lowliest sort of priest, my lord, Matthew said. Even in the Missionara Galactica, I am beneath notice. My ministry is with the poor and the sick. It carries no prestige and not a little disdain. I've never craved power or influence. I simply desire to do your father's work. That is reward enough for me.
Well said. That is exactly why I have chosen you, and not some princely demi-pope. You care. You fight alongside my armies, and you care for the meanest serf.
Gilliman's noble face became more solemn.
And I have heard your sermons.
You have? Said Matthew. He was surprised and honoured, but still he did not fall to his knees and start wailing. Gilliman was satisfied he had chosen well.
Take the book. My equerry shall present you with my seal and your identification as militant apostolic. As far as I am concerned, you are he. We shall treat it as a temporary appointment, if you like. You have 1 week to decide whether or not you will take the post permanently. Nevertheless, I would like you to do this one service for me. Write the sermon for the triumph I'm planning, and deliver it.
Are you commanding me?
I am asking you. You do not have to do it.
Gilliman looked searchingly at the priest. Matthew gripped the book.
Good, said the Primarch. Now, go. Anything you require will be made available to you.
You could deliver the words yourself, my lord.
I shall be honest with you, Frater Matthew.
Gilliman rested his hand on a pile of files, all in rough binders marked with the barred eye of the Inquisition.
I have looked carefully at many possible candidates for this office. I chose you as all the intelligence I have on your life suggests you are an honest man. Fervent, but reasonable. Kind, yet bold. As you said, you help the needy, and you have no ambition other than to do good, as far as I can tell. I have been wrong before.
I have my own work.
And I have greater for you, said Gilliman.
He lowered his voice and looked out through the cloisters to the floating rack of void combat.
If I say I am not a god, I damn myself in the eyes of my father's worshippers. If I say I am, I damn myself again in the eyes of those who are suspicious of me. Not every man regards my return as fortuitous. Some suspect fell powers at work. I have my detractors. I require someone who can handle the Adeptus Ministerium gently. Most dangerous of all to me is to have a man in this position of a worshipful character. I need someone who can get things done, who will not go into paroxysms whenever I speak, and one who will question what I say, should it need questioning. In short, I need someone who can see the man behind the god. You came to me freely. You have not cast yourself upon your knees. You may be surprised to learn that you are one of the very few members of your organization that I have been able to hold a proper conversation with. In the first few minutes of our exchange, you called me a hypocrite. The fundamental of it is, you are not overawed. You are therefore perfect for the role. You may not believe in me completely. I see that as an advantage.
The priest hugged the book close to his chest, like it were a precious child.
I believe in you, my lord. Because you have faith, priest, said Gilliman, and this time he could not mask his feelings.
His scorn slid off Rater Matthew like water. No, my lord, it is because I have met you, and I see you are sincere, if misguided. He bowed again.
I shall do as you ask, and write the sermon, and I shall speak its words, and in 1 week I shall give you my answer as to whether I will accept the appointment.